Pastor Jim did not tell you that one of his thoughts about why the attendance at the first service was down a little bit this week, he was torn between, was it the weather or was it because last week he talked about tithing? We are talking about tithing, that Christmas is a season for giving as we await the gift, the best gift of God's own Son to us. Will you pray with me? O Lord, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be acceptable in thy sight, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. I love the scripture that was chosen this morning. I'm chewing on the morsel of a proverb. I'll let you in on the sweet old truth. I visualize that as a caramel, and I'm chewing on the caramel. That's how wonderful the stories of God are. And this month, we are focusing on stories of giving as an inspiration and a teaching for our giving to God through the ministries of this church. So last week we talked about our own personal stories. Today we talk about inspiring stories that we've come across. And next week we'll be talking about the joy of giving. And then the fourth week is the love of God known to us in his gift. There are various ways to approach stewardship and to hopefully increase the giving in a church. Once there was a pastor who stood in front of his congregation and he said, I know for a fact that one of the men in this church is having an affair with a woman. And he said, unless I receive a $100 bill in today's offering plate, next Sunday I'm going to announce from the pulpit the name of this person. Well, the offering came in, and in it were eight $100 bills and one $50 bill with a note on it saying, I'll pay it off by when I get paid. Not a good way. Blackmail never works, if you ask me. We do not give because of that. We give because God has so generously given to us. I want to tell you a story about John Wesley. John Wesley is the father of Methodism. You know, he never started off to start a new denomination. John was an Anglican priest all of his life in the Church of England, and he died an Anglican priest. But he saw that the church had become dead and lethargic, and he felt filled with the Spirit. And so he went out to the highways and the byways and to the mines and to the factories, and he preached in the open fields, and the converts came. And after the converts came, they were disciplined in class meetings. Very small groups met weekly that were accountability groups. How did your week go? When did you obey God? When did you disobey God? Specific questions. You know, the word Methodist comes because when John was a student at Oxford, he was so methodical in obeying the disciplines, visiting the prisons, praying hourly or on the hour, that he was made fun of as a Methodist because he had such a method. So our name comes from derision. Anyhow, as people were converted by John's preaching and formed in those class meetings, one of the things that they learned was to give back to God 10% of what they earned. Now, previous to becoming Christians, these people had, for the most part, been on the lower class of society and had lived, you know, quite a, you know, carefree lives and known for a lot of drinking and spending their money that way and not caring for their families. But as they became disciplined in the classes, their personal economics began to climb. They became more well off. And Wesley found that the more successful the new converts became, the more they turned away from Jesus. The more they thought foolish the doctrines Wesley preached. And so Wesley wrote, "What shall we say then? That they should not save their money? That they should not be industrious?" No, and I'm quoting Wesley here with the language, "We should say it is the duty of every man to work as hard as he can, to make as much as he can, to spend as little as he can, so as to give away all that he can." See, for John Wesley, our father in the faith, if we didn't give, we lose the comfort and warmth of our salvation. The way to hold on to God is through giving, said Wesley. So it is, he became known for this quote, "Do all the good you can, at all the times you can, in all the places you can, to all the people you can, as long as ever you can." Another Britisher, Winston Churchill, put it this way, "You make a living by what you get. You make a life by what you give." Now, I've been privileged in my life to be the recipient of many gifts. And two of those gifts have been mission trips to Central America. The first trip happened about 10 years ago, and my son, who at the time was 10, and I went with a group from a church in Rochester to Tegucigalpa, which is the capital of Honduras. We did not go specifically to do any work. We went to form a relationship with that congregation, a relationship that continues to this day with that congregation. And so 10 days we were there, and we simply met with the members of that little church named Amor Fe y Vida, Love, Faith, and Life. And as difficult as it was with only two or three persons who were bilingual, we did Bible study together. And we walked up and down the dusty paths of the barrios, paths that the sewage ran down the sides. We broke bread together. We prayed together. We lived together for 10 days. Our final night there, each of us was split up, and we got to spend the night in one of the members of the congregation's home. So Elliot and I went to Mariana's house. She had a little bodega in the front part of the house. And there was a living room and a kitchen, maybe another bedroom, and an outhouse in the back, and the master bedroom, which she gave to Elliot and me. We got to her house about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and we were hot and dusty and dirty, and she said, "Would you like to take a shower?" And we said, "Well, yeah, that'd be great, but how do you do that when there's an outhouse?" And she said, "Good, get your stuff." And she took us across the street to her sister's house and showed us the shower that was installed there, which consisted of a great big tub like this on the floor and two smaller pails beside it. And the way you showered was you took the pail and you poured it over yourself, you soaped up, and then you took the other pail and you rinsed off. And I let Elliot go first. But you know what he said to me after he dried off, got dressed, he said, "Mom, I am so glad we came here." He showed him a way that so many people in this world live. So we went back to Mariana's house, and I noticed that there were people coming and going from the neighborhood, each carrying a little tin pail. And what was happening was, because Elliot and I were staying with her, Mariana had made tomatillas, which is a corn husk sort of thing, and you fill a great big pot and steam them, and they're usually only made for Christmas. But because she had American guests, she made a great big pot of those. And you know what this person in her poverty was doing? She was sharing with the whole neighborhood. You make a living by what you get. You make a life by what you get, by what you give. And then this last summer, 10 of us from my church in Mulberry went to San Jose, Costa Rica, for a week, again to do mission work. One of the places that we visited was, well, first on Sunday we worshiped in this church, again in a very poor barrio, and then we went back on Wednesday. This church serves breakfast and lunch every day to the children of the neighborhood. Now this barrio is so poor. The main road's out here, and it's up on a hill, but, and there are like no steps, but there are houses down in here. And the pastor told us that when it rains, the people who live down here can't get out to go to work because there's no way up the hill because it's so slick. There are no steps. So we went to the children's feeding program beforehand. We played with the kids, and then we helped to serve the kids this meager lunch of a little rice, a little beans, and it looked like half a slice of lunch meat cut in half was on the plate with a orange Kool-Aid. And towards the end of the line of the 70 plus children there, they were running out of the meat. And so they cut those pieces in half. $1 a day will provide those children breakfast and lunch. And then after we had fed the children, the pastor's wife had made lunch for our group. And there was rice again, but great big pieces of chicken. I couldn't eat the chicken. Out of their poverty, they gave. You make a living by what you earn. You make a life by what you give. And I tell you something, folks, I'll let you in on a little secret. I'm going back to San Jose, and I'll take as many people from this church with me who want to go. So now you're warned. In the next year or two, we're going to take a trip to Costa Rica. It was wonderful. You've all heard of Bono, lead singer of U2. A few years ago, along with Bill and Melinda Gates, was named Time Magazine's Man of the Year. He's a musician with a mission. But I never knew what got him started in his life of philanthropy until I found this story of a commencement address he gave at the University of Pennsylvania 20 years ago. He said that an amazing event happened in Philadelphia in 1985, Live Aid, that whole We Are the World phenomena, the concert that happened here. Well, after the concert, he says, I went to Ethiopia with my wife, Allie. We were there for a month, and the most extraordinary things happened to us. We used to wake up in the morning, and the mist would be lifting, and we'd see thousands and thousands of people who'd been walking all night to our food station where we were working. One man came, And Bono says he was standing outside talking to the translator. And a man came, and he had this beautiful boy, and he was saying to me in Amharic, I think, he said, "I can't understand what he's saying." And this nurse spoke English and Amharic and said to me, "He's saying, will you take his son? He would be a great son for you." Bono says, I was looking puzzled and said, and the man said again, "You must take my son, because if you don't take my son will surely die. And if you take him, he'll go to Ireland with you and he'll get an education." And Bono said, I had to say no. The rules and the regulations would not permit it. He said, "I walked away from that man, but I've never really walked away from him. I think about that man and that boy. And that," he says, "is when I started this journey. Idealism is under siege, beset by materialism, narcissism, and all the other isms of indifference." Now, I grew up in the 60s. I was just a bit too young to really be a part of the whole hippie thing, but it still caught my imagination. And you know, we ended the war in Vietnam, and we sang "Let There Be Peace on Earth." And I went to college as an idealist. I really thought that this generation would be the generation that would make all the difference. No more wars, no more poverty, no more suffering, no more hunger all over the world. And instead, what happened? Well, the boomers became the takers, and the 80s happened, and everybody was, you know, part of that generation of getting as much as you have can and making sure it has the right label on it. What happened to our idealism? Do you know that every single penny that we United Methodists give for missions goes to the cause to which we give it? Other places take out 10%, 20% overhead administrative cost. No, our administrative costs are funded by a different part of the United Methodist budget. But if you give, like to the United Methodist Committee on Relief, where there's flooding or tsunamis, 100% of that gift goes to the place where you want it to go. That's why I'm part of the church, my friends. I didn't lose that idealism. I still believe and look to the day when there will be no more wars and peace on earth and everybody will have clean water and enough food. You could say it's looking forward to the reign of God on this earth. And I'm part of the church because I want to be part of the people who keep the hope, who keep the vision. This church, I know, is made up of hopers, visionaries, and even people who take risks. Now, as I understand it, tell me if I'm wrong, in the old building, the congregation size was about 250. Is that correct? And now, these days, we worship about 600. Jim says about 1,200 people come through our worship services in a year. But those 250 people took the risk and stepped out in faith and took on the building of this building. How would they ever afford it? They took the risk and they sacrificed. I'm told that all kinds of stories. One man put off his retirement for a year, kept on teaching so he could fulfill his tithe to the building fund. Some people gave up vacations or put off getting a new car, gave up cleaning personnel so they would have that extra money so that this place could be built. It's a story of giving, of people who know you make a living by what you get. You make a life by what you give. And this church teaches that lesson to its children. Hear the expression of faith now as we listen and see the video.
Recently, I started doing act lighting. Jeremy found out that the candle lighter was missing one of them. One day, me and Jay were in the car and we decided to buy a candle lighter from our piggy banks. So we went to Carpenter Sun and we bought one. And they match except for their size. We bought one because we wanted the church to have two candle lighters.
Those are two young people from this congregation. They saw a need, broke open their piggy banks, and filled the need. They're making a life by what they give. Once there was a man, early 1920s in this country, who became very wealthy, and he gave a huge sum of money so that a university, a college, could be built in Africa. The school was established. The stock market crash came, and that once wealthy man lost everything. When the school in the 1950s was getting ready to celebrate its silver 25th anniversary, they contacted the man in Chicago who had made the school possible and invited him to come to the ceremonies. And he said, no, he wouldn't do that. So finally, they flew somebody over here to Chicago and talked to the man and convinced him to come. And they found him living in poverty in a very meager house. And he went back to Africa. And when he was sitting on the stage watching the programs, the students, graduates of that school, he said, I only got to keep what I gave away. You make a living by what you get. You make a life by what you give. So as I began with John Wesley, I'm going to end there also. Wesley lived that way. Before he founded Methodism, he was a teacher at Oxford University in the 1700s. When he started off his career, he was paid £30 a year. In those days, that was quite a bit of money. His living expenses were £28, so he gave away £2. The next year, his income doubled. He still managed to live on £28, and gave away £32. The third year, he earned £90, lived on £28, gave away £62. The fourth year, £120, lived on £28, gave away £92. One year, his income was over £1,400. He lived on £30, gave away nearly all of the £1,400. You see, Wesley felt that with increasing income, what should rise is not our standard of living, but our standard of giving. During his lifetime, John Wesley gave away more than £30,000. At his death, he was a pauper, having less than £10 to his name. and yet he still left instructions that the black cloth that covered his casket was to be cut into pieces, given to the poor, out of which to make clothes. And so, we are inspired by the stories of faith and our founder. Wesley, who said, "Do all the good you can, at all the times you can, in all the places you can, to all the people you can, as long as ever you can." May it be so.